Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store and online. And now, the more you buy, the more you save on beds, bases, and more. Limited time. For J.D. Power 2025 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Check it out at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com today.
Hi, listeners. Alicia here for another experimental solo Lorehound joint. Like the last time I did this, I am back to talk about the short films of award season, the snack-sized cinema that I love and think that you would too if you just take 10 to 20 minutes over a cup of coffee and explore another world. So last time I highlighted the Oscar-qualified shorts that I had seen at that time that I thought Lorehounds would like. You'll find a link to that episode in the show notes if you haven't heard it yet. But good news, 9 of the shorts that I talked about in that episode have now been shortlisted for the Oscars. So congratulations to, in the order that I ranked them, my favorite, Two People Exchanging Saliva. My other favorite, Jane Austen's period drama. The Pearl Comb, put a pin in that. We'll be back to that one. The Singers, Beyond Silence. And on the animated side, Retirement Plan, The Girl Who Cried Pearls, Hurricane, and Playing God. So nomination voting closes at the end of this week as this episode is released. So actually, just as this episode is being released, it's closing for the Oscars. And fingers crossed that these turn up in the nominations as well. We'll find out on January 22nd. That's when Oscar nominations are announced. But as I said, we will be talking about one of those shorts that I just named and also one other Oscar shortlisted short today. But today's episode, we are focusing back across the pond, actually to my side of the pond where I live. We're looking at the British Academy Awards, or better known as the BAFTAs, because the long lists are out, and the long lists for the BAFTAs are basically the same thing as the short list for the Oscars. They are the semi-final round, the round to which films are narrowed down before the final voting for nominations. And this voting lasts into the beginning of next week, so until the 20th, and nominations will be announced on January 27th for the BAFTAs. That is 5 days after the Oscars, which is unusual. Usually the BAFTAs are nominated first, so things are happening a little out of order this award season, but I like it. I like the chaos. The BAFTA ceremony, though, is almost a month earlier than the Oscars. It takes place on Sunday, February 22nd. So as I said, the long lists are a lot like the Oscar short lists, that semi-finalist rounds, but the difference is the BAFTAs do it for, I think, every category, pretty much, all the ones that are voted on. And whereas the Oscars leave it to the individual branches, which categories do it and which don't. And today we are going to be focusing on two of those BAFTA long-listed categories, British short film, which that's just basically the live action films. They mix both fiction and documentaries together. And then the other category is British animation, which is self-explanatory. So they split it by medium rather than format. Technically, there could be an animated documentary in the animation side. There isn't this year, but there could be. And basically, to keep it simple, the way that shorts get qualified for the BAFTAs is by being accepted to at least 2 qualified festivals. There is a list on their site. It is possible to get exemptions in some cases on a case-by-case basis, but yeah, all those rules are online. For anyone who's really curious, like the Oscars, a film must be 40 minutes or less to be qualified as a short. Now, these are all much less. The animated shorts are an average of 10 minutes each, and the live action shorts are an average of 20 minutes each. That's pretty typical for these different media because basically it takes a lot more time to animate 1 minute of film than it does to just film it. So that's why animated films, especially animated shorts, do tend to be a bit shorter. and why we should be patient waiting for longer format films like Beyond the Spider-Verse. For the BAFTAs, of course, the other significant rule to qualify is that it must have significant involvement by British individuals. Well, you can tell by the categories now, for the feature categories, they do also look at international films. You'll see those popping up. But for the shorts, it is specifically for films linked to Britain in some way, usually by filmmaker, but not always set in Britain, as we'll see. And sometimes they are international collaborations. But yes, it does, of course, mean there is a slightly different pool of shorts that are eligible for the BAFTAs versus the Oscars, which tend to have a lot more international representation in the shorts categories. Now, the way this works is the shorts are an opt-in chapter. So basically, people can say, hey, I want to vote on shorts. Members of the British Film Academy, of course. And then there is a jury vote to determine the long list. And the jury also determines the nominations. And then all film voting members across the BAFTAs will be able to vote on which one wins, just as with the other voting categories. Now, I said there are the two categories. We have the animation category. There are six shorts I'll talk about today. Three of them will likely go on to be nominated. And on the live action side, which again mixes fiction and documentary, there are 10 listed shorts, five of which will go on to be nominated. And fun fact, the winner of last year's live action prize for the BAFTAs, a short called Rock, Paper, Scissors, it's on the live action shorts shortlist for the Oscars this year. So sometimes it goes like that because, there's shorts tend to have a longer cycle. They don't just release to the cinema like many features. So they live on the festival circuit sometimes for years, and they may have eligibility for various awards in different years. It's just how it works out. Now, I am delighted that I got a chance to watch this year's 16 long-listed shorts. Thank you so much to the filmmakers and their representatives who helped me see their films so that I could talk about them today. I will be running through both categories, talking first about the six long-listed animated shorts, half of which will make it to nominations, and then talking about the 10 live-action shorts, which I have divided just for the purposes of conversation into documentaries. And finally, we will close with a look at the 7 fiction live-action shorts. And then of these 16 shorts I'm talking about today, probably 8 of them will go on to be nominated, and 2 will walk away with BAFTAs. Now, I'm going to be running through them today, no ranking or anything, just talking about them in simple alphabetical order within those categories. I have to say, overall, it's a good bunch of films all around. I will shout out my favorites amongst the bunch, but honestly, each of them has something exceptional going for them. Now, unfortunately, a lot of these are less readily available to watch online, but the ones that are nominated for the BAFTA are usually shown for a limited time on YouTube the weekend before the BAFTA Awards. This is obviously up to the filmmakers and whatever other pressures that they're facing, but usually most of the nominated films are part of this short showcase on YouTube. So if you are paying attention to the award season channel on Discord, on the Lorehounds Discord, then I will share more information about that in February as it becomes available. Usually it's a situation where we're getting close to the weekend before and we're like, is it going to happen this year? We haven't heard anything. And then boom, there it is. So I'll definitely keep people who are interested posted there. However, there are some today that are available to watch right now. I will let you know when that is the case, and I will put those links in the show notes. If you do want to see any of them that are currently available, I recommend jumping on them immediately as they can be quickly taken offline. But there's also in the show notes, also for the films that are not available, you can watch the trailers. There are links where you can find more information on how you might be able to see the films for yourself, and also information about how they're made. I'll point out some fun details today, but there's a lot more depth with, especially some of these have really in-depth documentaries about the making of, or websites dedicated to the technical processes behind them, for those of you who are interested in that side of filmmaking. Okay, let's begin. British short animation. 6 films, starting with Brain Space, directed by Laura Tofarides. This one is 8 minutes long, and the official plot summary is, propelled into her own mind, Ree explores the thoughts, fears, and impulses that shape our internal world. When her inner child is threatened by the shadows of her own trauma, her fear turns to anger, and she must fight to regain control. From desperation to acceptance, she learns to choose life. So that is pretty much the entire plot as there is. This is kind of more of a vibes-based experience. There's sort of a lovely clay-like 3D animation. I know less about the technical making of this one, but it is very well animated, attractive to the eye. It's got some great ethereal, trippy vibes in terms of the music and the visuals. There's lots of mindscape metaphors going on in the way that the action and the activity unfolds. Very mental health focused short, as the summary suggests. This is a Welsh short. I was excited when I saw that when it opened, because I do have a Welsh background on my mother's side. But there are no words spoken, so the story just communicates itself through the animation. So that is Brain Space. Again, you can find out more information and watch a trailer for yourself via the links in the show notes. Next up, Cardboard, directed by J.P. Vine. This one is 9 minutes long, and the plot summary goes, when an overwhelmed single dad pig moves his piglets into a rundown trailer park, he fears he's failed his family. But soon, his kids create a wildly imaginative game from a simple cardboard box, and Dad has a choice. Dwell on the past, or join them on their intergalactic adventure. So this is one of the two shorts on this list that is also shortlisted for an Oscar, so it is still in the running for both awards for this year at this point. It is one I think some Lorehounds members of the Discord have already gotten a chance to see this because I have shared it now twice in the Discord as it's popped up for just brief windows of 48 or 96 hours that you're able to watch. If you are listening to this at the time that it drops and you rush over and find that link, then I think you have a few hours left. If you're listening to this later, well, if there's another opportunity where this or any of the other shorts are publicly available again, then I will share that in the Discord, as I said. And if you're not a member of the Discord, you can find a link to that in the link tree in the show notes. We'd love to have you to talk about all our film, TV, book, music, and other geekery. But Cardboard, this is a really charming short. It has some gorgeous classic animation. It's really a warm hug of a movie with a bittersweetness at its heart. It's anthropomorphized pigs, just a father and his sons trying to come to terms with change in their life and how kids can help adults realize what's really important. My letterbox review for this one is, kids are like cats. A cardboard box is all they need to keep themselves entertained. So yeah, very charming one. If you get a chance to watch this, definitely jump on it. Next up is Death's Peak, directed by Willie Fair. This one's 9 minutes long. Plot summary goes, desperate for connection, David digs up his brother's corpse. With their trusty red wagon, they ascend a treacherous mountain in pursuit of their childhood dream. And this one's very morbidly charming, so that is kind of my cup of tea. But it's at its heart, it's about loss and loneliness, really. It's about powering through grief or you know, finding beauty in grief in a way and ultimately moving on. This one I did have to look up, like, what is going on with the visuals? It's very a cool sort of charmingly lumpy clay-like style of 3D. Well, I found the website, which is linked in the show notes, to production designer Claudia Morals. And just to quote her, she says, the world of Death's Peak is primarily constructed from papier-mâché, symbolizing the fragile and vulnerable state of the main character's mind throughout the film. The visible cracks, tears, and paper edges gave this environment a subtly broken appearance that reinforced the emotional tone of the story. Working with this medium also challenged us to think creatively, especially when constructing elements not typically made from papier-mâché, pushing the boundaries of its use in set design. So that one is called Death's Peak. I recommend checking out the trailer in the show notes. Moving on to, I think this one might be my favorite in the animated category. It's called Overreacting, directed by Ida Mellum. This was a collaboration between Norway, Sweden, and the UK, 12 minutes long. While stuck at her sister's baby shower, a 30-something woman is forced to decide whether she wants to have kids or not after unexpectedly giving birth to her reproductive organs. So, yeah, that took a left turn mid-description. It's a very quirky film. It's delightful stop motion. They don't include this in the marketing, so I hope it's okay to say there are some musical elements, which I found absolutely delightful personally. A bit surreal and absurdist, but ultimately it's just a great representation of these conversations that women in their 30s especially are just indeed very tired of having. So I can't wait till this is publicly available so that I can share it with other people in my life who I know will appreciate it. It looks great. I love it's stop motion again. It's actually stop motion mixed with live puppeteering. If you follow the info link, there's a little making of doc that shows how all of this put together. It's so impressive. I love the knitted character designs, you know, these sort of very textile character designs. And just overall, this one, it goes a lot of unexpected places. And I do love a short that goes unexpected places and also touches at a commonly experienced issue that doesn't get enough discussion, but in a very humorous and entertaining way. So obviously this one will speak to women who identify with this situation, but I think it will be amusing and hopefully insightful to everyone. Actually, I think maybe it's even more important for people who don't understand this perspective to watch this short. Anyway, this one's gotten some nice attention. It was at Annecy and Tribeca, and it was also eligible for an Oscar this year, but it was unfortunately not shortlisted. That brings us to Solstice, directed by Luke Angus. It is 11 minutes long, and the plot is a lonely Inuit must endure the endless summer daylight to be reunited with his lost love. This was another one that was eligible for an Oscar this year, but not shortlisted. But it has shown to be very popular with anyone I know who's seen it. It is an accessible, heart-strumming kind of short. I've seen lots of compliments on the 3D visuals, which are full of texture. There's some impressive work with this. He's wearing this big furry hood, and there's a lot of highly technical work making this come alive in digital 3D. And actually, Luke Angus, the filmmaker, he made a 47-minute video, which I have linked in the show notes, that explains his entire process of making this film. So he did it all by himself. He takes you step by step through how, from writing to all of the technical stuff. This is another wordless one, no spoken words. I'm going to quote Brandon from the podcast Shortstick, who will be a guest after Oscar nominations to talk about the Oscar-nominated shorts. And in talking about this short, he compared it to Up, actually, a complimentary in terms of the story. It talks about being reunited with his lost love. So there's that aspect to it. But he also said he also compared it visually to the Pixar shorts of old in terms of style. So that, yeah, I think that he's correct there. That helps give you a good impression of what you're getting from this one. Check out the trailer in the show notes for a better impression. And that brings us to our final short in the British animated shorts category. This one is titled Two Black Boys in Paradise, directed by Baz Sells. 9 minutes long. And this was another one that was eligible for an Oscar, but not shortlisted. It is about two young black men who journey through a dreamlike world in search of acceptance from each other and from themselves in this meditation on queer love, cultural stigma, and freedom of expression. So this is literally poetry set to animation. It is a blend of fantasy with reality, or, well, animated reality. And by animated, I mean it is, once again, another stop motion short. you can find a brief making of documentary online. And I was thinking about how popular stop motion has become again. There's sort of a renaissance of it. And I was noticing in their making of that they were 3D printing some of the parts. So I was like, well, yeah, maybe that actually helps make stop motion animation, which is very labor intensive. It helps make it a bit more accessible. But I think that there's also just a desire to have more, you know, it's this whole thing with the VFX that we've talked about on the network too, where people are craving for more practical makeup and VFX again. We want something that feels tangible and real. And that is what these stop motion shorts deliver. But about Two Black Boys in Paradise, it is quite visually lovely. It is also, it leaves you with some questions about what's happening in the short with this magical realism and also questions about the realities of our world. My favorite shot, though, is the final frame, but that might have to do with my gender. Okay, so that is the British animated short category, the 6 shortlisted films. 3 of them will likely go on to get a nomination. I'm going to take a quick break here, and when I come back, we're going to talk about the live-action categories. First, 3 documentaries, and then 7 fiction live-action shorts. See you on the other side.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store and online. And now, the more you buy, the more you save on beds, bases, and more. Limited time. For J.D. Power 2025 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Check it out at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com today.
Okay, and we are back, and let's dive into the British short film category. There are 10 long-listed films here. Let's start with the 3 documentaries. Again, these will all be competing against each other, but just for the sake of discussion, I've separated out the 3 documentaries, starting in alphabetical order with Neil Armstrong and the Langholmites, which was directed by Duncan Coles and produced by Industria Studios. This is an 18-minute short. It had its premiere at Tribeca Film Festival. And the plot tagline, his greatest leap: everyone knows Neil Armstrong came back from the moon in 1969, but it wasn't until 3 years later, when the people of a tiny Scottish town stepped in, that he finally got home. Neil Armstrong, the Langholmites, is a film about the day one of the world's most famous men visited the small borough of Langholm and the profound emotional effect the place and its people had on the normally stoic astronaut. So, to quote another bit from the marketing, a wry and beautiful slice of Scottish life and a unique lesser-known tale about one of America's most famous sons. And this was really charming. Actually, I guess this is my favorite amongst the docs. It's a refreshingly delightful doc. It captures, you know, the best side of Scottish spirits through their link with this prodigal son. There's a lot of really fun humor. It's nice to have that sort of brain break from all of the very serious documentaries and films that I've been watching in this award season. And just to remember the positive sides of humanity for a second, if that makes sense. It's just fantastic counter-programming to everything that reminds us what's wrong with the world. Here's one little moment where everything was very right and people who still remember it and treasure it. The second doc on this list is called This Is Endometriosis, directed by Georgie Willeman and Matt Houghton. This one is 19 minutes long, and the summary goes, in this intensely personal documentary, Georgie Willeman shares with us the challenges of her years-long struggle with endometriosis, a most nebulous chronic illness. As part of her healing, Georgie turns her camera on fellow sufferers, finding beauty in their collective experience. And this falls in the category of it's well made, but it's also one that people should watch because it's important. I do know a lot of people who have these invisible illnesses, including endometriosis. You know, endometriosis is only one type of invisible illness. There are quite a few. I have autoimmune issues myself, which is definitely not the same thing, but there are just so many millions of people who are suffering from things that can't easily be seen. So it's very hard to get empathy. It's very hard for people to understand pain when they're not actively feeling it themselves. You know, it's even the way they talk about women forget about the pain of childbirth so that they're willing to have another. But this is true that if we're not experiencing the pain ourselves, we can't imagine that someone else is living in it constantly. And that is the experience of a lot of people with endometriosis. Now, this is also made by an artist, obviously. So we do have a more poetic look at this life of living in pain, and also looks at her experiences with treatment and recovery and fears of relapse. And also, the description said, turning the camera on others in that situation as well, who all have their own different experiences. So you learn in this documentary what endometriosis is, some of the ways it's being treated today, how it affects people. And this is actually one of the ones that you can watch right now for yourself. It's currently available to see online, so you will find that linked in the show notes. Bringing us to the final documentary in the British short film category, Welcome Home, Freckles, directed by Hui-Ju Park. This one is 26 minutes long. And this is about, after 4 years away, Hui-Ju returns home to South Korea. Exchanges with her loved ones are awkward and clumsy. Hui-Ju turns once again to her familiar rituals, pruning the trees, preparing a sauce, tying a braid. And that description does cover aspects of it, but I would say the core of this documentary really is her confronting her family to help herself come to terms with, you know, some generational discussions about how patterns of destructive behavior are passed down. And the doc was clearly created in an attempt to confront this and break the cycle and stop just saying like, well, it's how things have always been done. This is what was done to me. She's asking us all to take a moment, take a pause and think about this and think about why are we passing on our own most miserable experiences. Even though it does tackle this very serious subject, the whole aspect about, you know, the familiar daily rituals and just the calm level-headedness of these conversations make this a low-key hang despite the serious subject. It's actually quite easy to watch. So you'll find information about that, of course, you know where, in the show notes. All right, let's swap over now to British short film, The Fiction Side. So there's 7 films over here. Starting with 22 Plus One, directed by Pippa Bennett-Warner. This is a 20-minute film, and the tagline is, "What do you hold on to when you have to let go?" It's about a couple navigating late-term pregnancy loss who are confronted with the reality of racism in the healthcare system. So really, it's about the experience of Black women not being taken seriously by white doctors. In the director's statement, she said, "When I learned the shocking statistic that Black women face 3 times higher risk of miscarrying than white women, I knew this was a film that had to be made." And she developed it with another Pippa Vosper, who is the author of a book called Beyond Grief, which explores miscarriage and baby loss. So this really is coming from an experiential place of them combining their experiences together. This was also an Oscar-qualified short this year, wasn't shortlisted, but hey, it's longlisted here. And this one is also currently available to watch on YouTube, so you can find that link in the show notes. Second on this list, unfortunately not available to watch on YouTube, but do check out the trailer, is Blondie, B-L-O-N-D-I, directed by Jack Salvadori. This is 19 minutes long, and if you don't recognize that name, Blondie, brace yourselves for the plot. Can a dog still be a man's best friend if that man is the Führer? Blondie explores the bizarre bond between Hitler and his beloved German Shepherd. From eating the crumbs under the table at the Führer's birthday to living in the confinement of the bunker, this film presents intimate glimpses of the dog's daily life intertwined with the realities of war, depicting the oblivious pet's surreal impact on the Reich. So despite the whole Hitler of the premise, this is actually definitely one of the more fun shorts on this list. It's much more lighthearted than it might seem, but also, of course, it is a satire poking at something much deeper, a satire of fascism, of course, but also a look about how everyone looks a little less evil to their beloved pet until your pet parent, you know, tries out their cyanide on you. And sorry, spoilers for history if you didn't know that. But this one is actually, this is one of my favorites. I do think a lot about the fact that Hitler was a vegetarian and a dog lover and, you know, the whole cognitive dissonance of that, of this complex individual who did horrible things. And how can you be someone who's like, oh, well, I won't eat meat because morality, and then murder millions of people. So this doesn't go so deep into that. It's just a short. It's from the dog's perspective, but I do appreciate that it is specifically shot from this perspective. I will say, warning for vertigo sufferers, the dog, Lexi, is the cinematographer. So nominate Lexi the dog for cinematography, you cowards. But what this means basically is that much of the film is filmed through a camera mounted on the dog. So vertigo sufferers might have a little trouble, especially in the first scenes where she's running around. A little heads up for those of you who do get to see this. There are newsreels intercut throughout with fun pet fascism facts about the laws around the use of the name Blondie. Basically, yeah, a sort of fascist control of the use of that name of pets in Germany. All of that is bullshit. It was made up. I fell for it. The director assured me it's not actually real. So feel free to laugh along with all of that darkly. Now, I do know this one will be playing at the London Short Film Festival on January 31st. It is still making the festival rounds now. So if you are interested, check out the trailer. And there's info links in the show notes where you can find out where it might be playing next, where you can see it as well. Okay, third fiction short on this list is Majid/Zafar, directed by Louise Hinman. And this is 18 minutes long. This one was not only an official selection of the BFI London Film Festival, but actually it was a BIFA winner in 2025. BIFA, B-I-F-A, is basically the British indie film group. So if you know the Independent Spirit Awards in the US, well, the BIFA are the British equivalent. And this one is, as of right now, also available to watch yourself. The plot is tensions arise amidst the heat of a busy British-Pakistani takeaway. And I really like this one. It does seem well-received overall. And it's one of those ones that I've been thinking a lot about since. I would especially recommend this to fans of The Bear, not just because it's set in a kitchen, but because it's, yeah, the pacing, the frenetic pacing. I actually had to pause after I started it to make sure that I wasn't accidentally playing it sped up. There's this claustrophobic camera work that really emphasizes the speed and the intense pressures of a kitchen. And then also at the same time, you know, you have social situations going in because the main character, this is the night when he's going to have an engagement ceremony with a woman he's just become engaged to. And he also seems to be fighting with his friend at the same time. And he's also getting pressured, like, do your cooking, do your work. You can worry about all this later. And then it ends in the back half with this moment of stillness where all of the pieces fall into place. And it's a really beautiful and heart-wrenching tale of humanity. I know I'm reluctant to say too much and potentially spoil any of this, though I'll say when I was watching, I figured out pretty quickly where it was going, and that ruined nothing for me. I still thought it was beautiful and heartrending. So that's Majid Zafar. More information on that in the show notes. And yeah, you can watch it there for now, at least while we're recording too. Next up, middle of this live action fiction list, Nostalgie, directed by Katherine Ferguson, 19-minute short. This was nominated for Best Short at the LFF in October. It is about a 1980s pop star who receives a surprising invitation to perform, pulling him out of musical retirement and into a moral dilemma. And I'll say it is about an English singer who is invited to perform in Northern Ireland. And he goes in unprepared, basically, not really thinking about the history of what he is walking into until he is confronted with that. It has a grainy lived-in texture to the photography that adds, you know, some gorgeous grit to this. And I would really love for them to release the soundtrack. She actually had Dan Smith of Bastille, the group, write two songs for this because, yeah, there needs to be songs. And I would totally listen to them. They're bangers. This one is currently on the festival circuit in the UK. Check the info link to find out where it's playing next. And I'm going to be looking up Catherine Ferguson's The Director's debut feature, which just came out. It's called Nothing Compares, and it's about Sinead O'Connor. Moving on to The Pearl Comb, directed by Ali Cook, 21 minutes long. And this is actually the third time we're talking about this short on this podcast. This was also shortlisted for an Oscar, and it was one of the shorts that I highlighted in my Shorts for Lorehounds listeners episode that I released a few weeks ago. But also subscribers who listened to my Imagine Fantastic Film Festival What You Watch an episode with John might remember that I mentioned that this was the short that audience ranked number one of the festival overall. So it's getting lots of love. The plot again is a doctor hellbent on proving a woman's place is in the home and not practicing medicine is sent to investigate her miraculous claim only to discover the source of her unearthly power. And this is the mermaid folk horror film. It is based on an old Cornish folktale set in 1893 with production designed to die for. It's definitely, it packs a lot into its 20-minute runtime in terms of themes and story development and intelligently used visual effects. This is maybe the highest profile on this list, not least because it is currently available to watch on Disney Plus. So if you have access to Disney Plus, you can turn it on right now. I'm pretty sure in all countries. So that's The Pearl Comb, and I have a feeling there's a good chance we might be talking about that one again soon. Next on the list is Terence, T-E-R-E-N-C-E, directed by Edim Kelman, 15 minutes long, and it's about Terence works the night shift outside a shopping center. It appears he's blessed with a gift, which he uses to heal people from London's African community. When he catches wind of his brother's return, he's faced to deal with his own unhealed wounds. So my Letterboxd review of it was a beautifully subtle short about a security guard who may be invisible to outsiders, but is seen as a healer within his own community, although he struggles to let others help him heal in return. So it's, yeah, this is a really nuanced character study, and that is kind of my favorite kind of short. It quietly touches on race, faith, family, all at the same time, how all of these things interact in a person defining who they are and how they react to things themselves. I'll say it is currently one of the tougher to find ones as it officially has a 2026 release and there's not even a trailer available yet, but I did link to info about this one in the show notes. Which brings us to our final short of this episode. And it's a good one to end on because it's definitely one of my favorites overall. It's called Wonderwall, directed by Roisin Burns. It's 27 minutes long. And the plot goes, Liverpool, August 1995. Siobhan, age 9, and her older brother Rory are waiting for just one thing, to find out whether Oasis or Blur will win the Britpop battle tonight. But Siobhan defies her brother and escapes, finding herself alone in the night. Determined to find a way to watch the battle of the century on television, she wanders the city and plunges into the strange world of adults. My Letterboxd review for this one is Children See, Children Learn. And yeah, I love this. It's a gorgeous snapshot of a time and place and all the confusing lessons of childhood. It's, you see Siobhan and her brothers also, but especially Siobhan, just trying to trying to understand the adult turmoil going on in town around them. This is a time when there was a huge change in the dock workers, and they are on strike, and this became a dying industry at this point. It was a turning point there. And you see how these children are reflecting the turmoil of the adults without really understanding what they're doing or why. It's just kind of mimicry. I got to watch a behind-the-scenes interview, which is linked in the show notes, where she talked about finding these kids. It's really impressive that she really wanted kids from these neighborhoods that she was reflecting, but also the kids that could act, and seeing especially how the actress who plays Siobhan does. It's a year of strong child performances, but I would put her performance up against the strongest. It's also, I mean, there's obvious serious melancholy tones to it, but it's really just a covert little adventure story. And it features, I'll say, whether this is a pro or a con for you, you decide, but it features much less Oasis than I expected. I imagine that getting the rights to the songs would have been a big thing, but it's not about Oasis at all. It's about Siobhan's first awakenings to coming of age. Now, this has some prestige in the fact that it was selected for the Cannes La Semaine de la Critique. So it was also eligible for the Oscars this year, but unfortunately not shortlisted. But fingers crossed that it jumps from BAFTA long list to BAFTA nominee at the end of this month. This is another one of the more currently difficult to find ones, not officially quite released yet. But there is a short clip from the film in the notes, plus that interview that I mentioned. So do go and check that out. I encourage you to just explore the trailers of these films that I've been talking about and see which ones appeal to you. And then you can move on to the info links to find out more. If you get to see any of these yourself, I would love to hear about it. Come say hi on the Lorehounds Discords. Find that in the link tree in the show notes, or send us an email to lorehounds@thelorehounds.com. We are, of course, busy with all kinds of stuff. David and Nicole just wrapped up Pluribus with a final episode with John as a guest. David also just released a special episode with Captain's Pod previewing the new Star Trek show. He and John are doing weekly coverage of The Pit right now. And we are all, including Anthony and Steve, starting up extensive coverage of the new A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms series. It's going to be covering both the Lorehounds and Properly Howard feeds. We're all big fans. But there's lots else coming up. There's the MCU versus DCU episode, which will be released at the start of next week. There's a practical VFX interview coming out shortly after that. A Percy Jackson one-shot at the end of the month. 28 days later, the Bone Temple coming up soon. And since we're talking BAFTAs right now, just to pause there on 28 years later. Now, the movie that came out last year, they filmed these two back to back. That's why they're coming out so close together. But 28 years later was one of my favorite films of 2025. And unfortunately, a lot of awards institutions are not going to recognize that because of the bias against horror. And when it comes to which horror movies are making it into the award season, there are a few other ones that are ahead of 28 years later. Fine. However, it is a very British film, and it has been long listed in several BAFTA categories. So if you happen to be a BAFTA voter listening to this, then for your consideration, 28 years later, for Best British Film, I'm not saying it needs to win, but let it get a nomination. Adapted screenplay, like how many films can mix horror, humor, and the heartfelt messages of Memento Mori and Memento Amoris, which if you've seen it, you know what I mean. There's just a lot more heart and humor to this than you would expect by looking at the tin. It's also long listed in editing, very deserved. If you've watched, you understand. And also for original score, which was done by Young Fathers. Now, if you listen to our 28 years later reaction episode for the last movie, then you'll know. This really turned me on to. I realized that I did know a couple Young Father songs, but I've been listening to them nonstop since this. Absolutely love their score. Anyway, thank you for humoring me there. 28 years later, watch it if you haven't, vote for it if you can. Now, as far as this awards coverage series, the next major thing on the menu is the Oscars. The Oscar nominees are going to be announced January 22nd. So watch out for a reaction episode that weekend from David and I, where we're going to look at who got the Best Picture nominations and other key races and surprises. There is also an award season channel on the Discord where I'm sharing links to shorts as they become publicly available there. But there's also live chat threads during the major ceremonies. We had a great time talking about the Golden Globes recently. And I guess the next awards ceremony we're going to be talking about are the Indie Spirit Awards, February 15th, and then the BAFTA Awards. Subscribers, you, as always, get ad-free access to all of these episodes, plus additional episodes like the recent Death by Lightning, what you're watching, about the Netflix series. But even if you haven't watched it, we have our own resident James Garfield historian who led me through this key pivotal turning point in U.S. political history that's actually feels quite relevant right now. So do check that out if you have access. And we just recorded and will release shortly after this the January 2nd breakfast talking about winter beverages. And this month's 11Zs, the theme was cold comfort films. The poll is still open for a few hours yet as I'm recording. However, Fargo seems to be winning quite handily. So I'm pretty sure this month's 11Zs film for subscribers will be Fargo. Speaking, of course, of our supporters, I have to, as always, shout out our Discord server boosters, Aaron K., Tiller the Thriller, Doove71, Athena Ajalea, Listu, Nancy M., Ghost of Partition, Radioactive Richard, and Adrian. And just a big thank you to everyone who listened to this episode. If you enjoyed what you heard, please share it with anyone else you think might be interested. It's also nice if you can leave a nice rating and review wherever you're listening. And thank you especially, though, of course, to all of our subscribers, most especially to our highest tier, the Lore Masters, Samartian, Michael G., Michelle E., SC, Peter OH, Nancy M., Doove71, Brian8063, Frederick H., Sarah L., Garrett C., Andra B., Kwong Yu, Nathan T., Sub-Zero, Aaron K., Dali V., Mothership61, Gnarls? Kathy W., Listu, Jeffrey B., Elisa U., Ben B., Scott F., Stephen N., Julia F., Kali S., Ilmariel, Paul K., Rocky Zim, Jessica A., Red Zippy, The TCS, Dopamini, Catch It, Ellen R., Mrs. Tennant, A.C. Wilson, Eli W., Cassie K., Chumbaruni, Katilla, Josh Liu, Paint and PDX, Corey G., and always last, as always, Adrian. Do also check out our affiliates. Properly Howard is going to be taken over by A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, as will the Lorehounds feed in part. Catch up on Fallout with Radioactive Ramblings, and of course, check out my own Wool Shift Dust, where we just finished up A Christmas Carol, getting back into Dune, and the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast, where there's been quite a few episodes for subscribers recently. There's more coming to the public feed in the High Republic soon. Okay, let's leave it there, shall we? Happy movie watching, and speak to you all again soon.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting.
J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store and online. And now, the more you buy, the more you save on beds, bases, and more. Limited time. For J.D. Power 2025 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Check it out at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com today.